Okay, we begin here on the bottom of Lamed Bet and Mud Bet, four lines up from the bottom. Rava Bar Sharshum, Nafak Alei Kala, the Ka'achil Aradiatme. There were rumors circulating, there was news out there, that Rava Bar Sharshum was eating the karka of Yitomim, or in essence, he was stealing from Yitomim. Amarle Abaye, so Abaye says to him, Emily Izi Gufu Dovda Hechihava, says, you know, my young whippersnapper here, my young man, please tell me what's going on. Explain to me why these rumors are circulating about you. Amarle, Ara b'mashkonta hava nikitna me'avon diatme. I had a piece of land that I was keeping as collateral from the father of these yitomim. V'avale zuze achrine gabe. And I have another outstanding loan with him. V'achalta shnei mashkanta. And then I ate it the years of the mashkom. Just a couple of pieces to piece together here. First of all, he has the property because there was an outstanding loan, and this was the collateral for that loan. From the sugya here, it seems like it was what's called the mashkanta dusura, which we've seen before, which is that you eat it for a fixed length of time, no matter how much the production is. You get to utilize it for those years. All the production belongs to you. At the end of that fixed time, you give the mashkon back. You return it to the original owner, and the debt is forgiven. So that's a mashkon to desura. It's a fixed time period, no matter how much the production is, how much the utility of the sadeh is. So we don't measure that against the loan, but the fact that there are ups and downs on the field makes it that it's not rebeat ksutza, and that's why we allow it. We discussed this in Baba Metzia. So he had that in place. In addition to that, he had another outstanding loan with this individual. Whether that loan had a shtar to it, or whether that was a milveh alpeh, is not clear. Most think that it was a milveh b'shtar, although the Rashbam at the end of the sugya mentions that even if it was a milveh b'alpeh, it would still work. So it might have been an oral loan. So he figures, if he allows the land to go back to the Yitomim at the designated period of time when the mashkon was up, then he won't be able to get it back. He won't be able to claim against them, and we'll see in a second without a shvuah. So his best scenario here is to keep the mashkon, to roll it over and utilize it again for the other loan. He already has the mashkon. He's finished with it for one loan. He'll roll it over into the other loan, and that way he'll stop the land from getting back to the Yitomim, and he won't run himself into problems. So that's the basics of the case that we are discussing. As to how long he was in the land, it is not clear here at all. The Rashbam at the bottom of the previous Amud says, that he was already in this property for more than 3 years while the father was alive. Others suggest that he was in the property for 3 years after the father had passed away. Some say he wasn't in the field for 3 years at all. But he was there for a period of time because he had this mashkon. And now, Zamina, he says, I said to myself, if I give the land back to the Yitomim, and then I tell them that I have another outstanding loan, Amurabonon, then I'll be subject to what the Rabbonon say. When it comes to collecting from Yitomim, you can only collect with a shvuah. So he didn't want to take this shvuah. So in order to avoid the shvuah, he also wants to avoid the land going back to them. Because if the land is returned to him, the only way that he's going to get the land back is through a shvuah. There are two possible reasons for that. One is because labanim eivad mitzvah ninu, they're not individuals who are chayav in mitzvot, and paying off the loan of their father is a mitzvah, and therefore we don't compel them to pay while they're tanim. Or because we worry about sererere. We worry about the fact that the father gave him money, or he took money beforehand, and we are uncertain as to whether he could just grab the land, because we don't know if the debt was paid off. So for one of those two reasons, we don't allow you to collect from Yitomim, but then we make you take a shvuah to substantiate your claim. Now there is a difference between them, which is that in the case where we say la me'avid mitzvah ninu, then you would not be able to collect until they are gedolim. On the other hand, if it's an issue of tzerere, then there's a possibility that you could collect the loan even beforehand, as long as you take a shvuah. So it seems, that's what Tosafot points out over here, Benira Rabba Bar Sharshum Sovak Rav Huna Brei de Rav Yeshua. He holds like Rav Huna Brei de Rav Yeshua, that he explains the reason why you need a Shvuah, Zeniz HaKim Nechseyotum Mishum Tzarare. And therefore, he could have, through a Shvuah, taken the money immediately. It would have been relevant immediately if he took a Shvuah. Instead, He wants to withhold the property so he doesn't have to take a shvuah. Because if it was the other way around, he believed that the problem was that they were ketanim, then he wouldn't be able to get the money for a period of time. Forget about a shvuah, he wouldn't be able to get it until they grew up or got older. Because, Tosfot points out, if he believed like Rav Papa, that yitomim as ketanim don't pay, im kein afilu yehayamet kidvarav, even if it was true, lo yechol akev lehem akarka b'chovom, he couldn't keep the land for his chov because they have no obligation to pay him. So the only way there's an obligation to pay him is if you believe that they would have paid at this point in time had you taken a shvuah. So that's why he wanted to withhold the land from them so that he would avoid a shvuah and then he would collect his money. Ella, so what did he say? Ach b'shei l'shtar mashkanta, I will hide the shtar mashkanta, v'ochla shir zuzei, and then I will eat it, I mean, and utilize it for the amount of time until my loan is paid off. So basically, I'll defease the loan by keeping the land and utilizing the land. So just like the mashkanta, the surah beforehand, paid off the first loan, here, I'll pay off the second loan with the same mashkon, I'll just utilize it for the years until it's paid off, and then I'll hand them the land back. But in this way, I avoid having to take a shvuah, and possibly, if you hold like Rav Papa, you also avoid having to wait until the yitomim are gedolim. So given that, he decided that it was better for him to hold the land, keep it, pay off the loan. He wasn't trying to do anything illegal. He wasn't trying to steal the land from them. He was simply trying to get his loan paid off and then return it to him, but to avoid a shvuah. And according to the Balei Tosafot, possibly avoid having to wait until they were gedolim. But Tosafot does mention that it's possible he didn't worry about the hamtana, he just worried about the shvuah. He was willing to wait the time, he just didn't want to have to deal with a shvuah. And his logic was, demigo, debina amina lekucha hi biyadi, I could just say that I bought it, and therefore it's mine, mehemna, I would be believed. Ki amina it lezuzeg gabaychu, mehemna, I should be believed now when I say that there's an outstanding loan. Because he hid the shtar, quote-unquote, or ripped up the shtar of the mashkon, that takes away the evidence to the fact that the property is in his hands through a mashkon and not possibly purchased. As Tosfot points out, dafka mishum de kavash l'shtar mashkanta. It's only because he ripped up the shtar mashkon. The matzimim are the kucha yibiyadi. That's why he can say I purchased it. Toloya yodua de beturat mashkanta tadi yade. It was not obvious or apparent that he had the land as a mashkon. If it was well known or very obvious that the land belonged to him through a mashkon, then there's no way you can establish a chazaka. That we've seen in other places. Tosfot brings other situations. He says, v'chein devrim asum lashil askir, things that people normally borrow or rent. You cannot establish a chazaka on that. An aris. Certain individuals who have a relationship with the owner cannot establish a chazaka because of their relationship or because of the nature of the object. This is something that people normally lend. You can't establish a chazaka because we just assume he lent it to you and you didn't buy it. Chazaka only works in situations where you could claim that you bought it and it would be a reasonable claim and there's no alternative. I mean, they can't say we lent it to you, we rented it to you, because there's no evidence to the contrary. So then he claims that I have amigo that I could have said it was purchased. Therefore, I can keep the property and claim that they owe me the money and take care of this. And by the way, all of this is true. He's not lying in any way. He's not trying to cheat them anyway. He's just trying to avoid having to take a shvuah and having to deal with the courts. So Amalei, l'kucha yibiyadi, lo matzit amart. So Abayi says back to him, that's not a fair claim. Your migo is not a migo. Da'ika la kala da'ara diyat mehu. There are rumors circulating that the land belongs to the Yitomim. The whole incident started because there were rumors circulating that he had eaten or he was stealing the land of Yitomim. Well, those rumors didn't come from nowhere. There's obviously people believe that this land belonged to the Yitomim. So his claim is not valid because of the fact that we have evidence to the contrary. The evidence is the rumor. So you can't be believed that you have an outstanding loan because you could have said, I purchased it. Abaye claims he could not have said he purchased it because of the evidence to the contrary, which is these rumors that are circulating that they belong to the Yitomim. The way that the Rashbam terms it, Da'ika Kala Ve'edut Da'ara Diyatmehu. So the Rashbam adds in the additional piece here, which is that there was Edut as well. Yep. The Rashbam claims that the failure here is it's Amigo B'makom Edim, basically. Yes. which is that why it fails is because your Migo is trying to go up against Edim, and a Migo, we know, doesn't stand against Edim. That's the claim. We know that we're going to see it in later in today's daf, that that's position of Abaye, Migo Mamakom Edim, you're not Neeman. And so the Rashbam basically creates a situation or circumstance in which it's a Migo Bamakom Edim. Now, the Rashbam added in a piece of information here, Daika Kala Ve'edut. The Gemara only spoke about a Kala, and even Abaye only seems to speak about a Kala. Where did the Edim come from? And therefore, he says, Ein lecha micha'a gedola mizu. He says, there's no greater micha'a than this. Vayalecha lizeher bishkarcha. And therefore, you should have to produce a shtar that you are a lokeach over here. So whether the Rashbam literally means there was a dut, or rather he means that the kol, or the rumor circulating, serves the same purpose that Edim would serve, which is, when there's evidence to the contrary, you need to keep your proof to the fact that you purchased it. Your proof to the fact that you purchased it is a contract. The reason that after 3 years you don't have to keep your contract is because nobody's raised any issues with regards to your ownership, and therefore we let the Shnei Chazakah take over for the contract. Over here, that is not the case, because the rumors circulating puts you on notice that people don't believe that it is your property. And therefore, if you come now to claim that you bought it, and we have rumors circulating that it belongs to the Yitomim, you're on notice that you need to show a shtar, that there is some sort of objection to your ownership, even though it's not an articulated micha'ah that came directly to you and objected to your keeping it, but the rumors themselves are enough of a suspicion that arises that you're going to have to show a contract. And therefore, if you don't have a contract, you're not believed. And that's why the Migo fails over here, because your Shnei Chazakah are not going to help you in this instance. Tosfot says something interesting here. He says, Lekucha hu biyadi, lo matzid amart. You can't say this. Afagav diav amar lekucha hu biyadi, have a neman. Had he just said, I purchased it, he would have been believed. Mimoko makom lo avi Migo. It still doesn't work as a Migo. V'hachi perusho. So Tosfot puts a principle out here that is very important, which is he says that had he just made the claim that it was purchased, it would have worked. And the rumors and all the other stuff wouldn't have mattered. If he just said, I purchased it, and we have no evidence to the contrary, he would have been able to keep it because he had Shnei Chazakah. That assumes, depending on before, that he really had it for the number of years that he needed. But Tosfot says it would have worked. Ah, so why does the Migo fail over here? Tosfot has a huge chiddush. He says that your inability to use the Migo is because of the rumors that are circulating. Given that the rumors are circulating, you would never have been so brazen as to come in and claim that it was a kuchahi biyadi. So what Tosfot says is not every Migo works. Which is, the idea behind a Migo is, if I was going to lie, I had a better lie. And Tosfot says here too, if he said I bought it, it would have worked. And it would have been a better, quote-unquote, lie. It would have been a better position. So given that, if you came in and made the claim, you would have walked off with the property. But you didn't make the claim. Why didn't you make that claim? Because of the rumors that are circulating. That takes away that option of saying that I would have claimed the other thing. What Tosfot says is, sometimes the better claim is too difficult for you to make because of the circumstances surrounding the case. And therefore, we don't say that there's a Migo. Had you opted and used it, it would have worked. But in saying that you came with another claim and to say, oh, I had that option to use the claim, Tosfot says you don't have that option over here. The reason you don't have that option is because of the rumors that are circulating. So Tosfot views the problem not fundamentally in the Migo, like the Rashbam says. The Rashbam says the Migo fails because we have evidence to the contrary, which says that you won't be able to make that claim, or basically it's a Migo b'mako medim, or the way that the Rashbam phrased it, that there is already a mecha'a, and we would demand a contract for you. So according to the Rashbam, even if you came in and said, l'kucha hi biyadi, we wouldn't believe you. But the way the Baal HaTos would say, if you did come in and say, l'kucha hi biyadi, yes, we would believe you. But you didn't make that claim. Now that you didn't make that claim, we now say that the Migo is not effective, because you wouldn't have lied to say that, because there are mitigating circumstances that wouldn't allow you to make that claim. And those are the rumors. So those are two different ways to view what the failure was over here. The failure is either a fundamental failure, which is we wouldn't believe you, even if you told us you bought it. That's the Rashbam. Or the Tosafot says, yes, we would have believed you, and you said the Kucha, but you didn't make that claim. And the reason you didn't make that claim is because we have mitigating forces that wouldn't allow you, you wouldn't feel comfortable making the claim. And that takes away the migo from you. That takes away the opportunity for you to express it in that manner. Now the Baalei Tosafot say, what was Rava Bar Shashum thinking? Because why can't you force him to take a Shvuat Hesed? Tosafot points out, but he wouldn't have taken a Shvuah over here because it's karkot, it's land, and you don't take Shvuah al karkot. So the Chachamim can impose a Shvuah on you, which is Hapadu Yipara Michsei Yitomim. You want to collect from Yitomim, you have to take a Shvuah. So that's a Shvuah Derabanan that demands you take a Shvuah in order to collect your loan. Or if you keep the karka, you should be able to be protected from a Shvuah because there's no Shvuah on karkot. What the Baalei Tosafot point out, that's only true Midoraita. Midorabanan, we do force Shvuot on karka, and that would be a Shvuat Hesed. We would still compel him to take a Shvuat Hesed over here to say that whatever he did was clean and he didn't take anything more than he should have taken. So Tosafot says, what was Rava Bar Shashum gaining from keeping the property? So now he doesn't have to take a Shvuah. He's going to have to take a Shvuat Hesed anyway. So Tosafot over here says that you only take a Shvuat Hesed when the other claimant makes a Bari claim, when he makes a definitive claim against you. If the other side makes a definitive claim, then we're going to force you to take a Shvuat Hesed. So here the person makes a claim for money, and you deny the whole thing, kofar bakol. So there, min haTorah, there's no Shvuah. Chachamim came and imposed a Shvuat Hesed for you to walk away because the other person is making a definitive claim that you owe him money. So to over here, the only way you can compel him to take a Shvuat Hesed is if the other side makes a definitive claim, we don't owe you the money. But the Yitomim don't have that ability. The Yitomim don't know what happened with their father, or the Apitropos, the executor of the estate, doesn't know this information, and therefore they can't force a Shvuah. So that's the answer to your question. They don't know what's going on, and since they don't know what's going on, we're relying solely on Rav Bar Shashum to give us the information. So yes, he would have to take a Shvuah if he returned the land, but he's protected if he keeps the land, because then he won't have to take a Shvuah Hesed. But Abaye denies him that ability to do it because of the rumors that were circling. Ella, Zila Hadra Nihalayu, go give them back the property. V'chigadle Yatme, when they grow up, Ishtai Dini Bahadayu. Then you can take them to court. Then you can deal with them once they become a Gidulim. And that's because Kol Zman Sheim Tanim, as long as they are minors, in your dim nechseim, the gavot man, we don't take property from minors, from yitomim, unless rebeat is eating at it. I mean, unless there's losses being incurred, and the longer you wait, the greater the losses will be, then we pay off the loans of the yitomim. But otherwise, where they're not going to lose anything, we wait until they are adults, and they can be the defendants in the case. And at that point, we're going to demand you take a shvuah in order to collect from the land. As the Rashbam points out, even though generally we believe that a child is not allowed to engage in transactions of property or his parents' property until he is 20, there is a threshold. We say even though when you turn 13, you're a gadol, still for understanding and be able to transact and not be cheated, we want you to wait until you're 20 so that you make good decisions. So there is a delay between becoming an adult, quote-unquote, and becoming a responsible adult. You become an adult at 13, you only become a responsible adult after 20. So we don't allow you to transact in your parents' land if it was left to you until after the age of 20. Oh wait, it's very common. That's why the sickness called teenagehood exists between 13 and 20. It's because of this, exactly that. You reach adulthood, but you don't have that sense of responsibility or perspective. So then, what the Rashbam points out over here, that's only true when they don't owe money, or there's no other reason to pay it off. Over here, the Beit Din will intercede and force them to sell the property to pay off the loan because there's a reason to sell the property. They're not just transacting willy-nilly. They're transacting in order to pay off a loan that we will allow between the ages of 13 and 20. So this is where the Rashbam at the end says that even if it was a milval peh, even if the second loan that was outstanding, that he did not have a documentation of that, he still would be able to make the claim because if he takes the Shvuah, we allow you to claim for the Yitomim. So in the end, if we force him to give back the land, not withhold the land, then whether it's a milvah per, whether it's milvah bishtar, he can come and take a shvuah when they become of age and collect the monies from the yitomim, and that's what Abaye says he has to do. He's got to wait, and that's it. Now, obviously, waiting wasn't a big issue for him, because that doesn't seem to be what bothered him. What bothered him is taking the shvuah, and that Abaye is compelling him to do anyway, which is you got to take the shvuah, because I'm going to force you to give back the land. So now you'll have to wait and take a Shvuah in order to collect this property. So if you believe like the Baalei Tosafot, the Rav Bar Shashum held of Rav Huna, breed of Yeshua, that it was a problem of Tzarare, then he could have taken the property right away. And that's why he wants to take it without a shvuah. Because had he taken a shvuah, he would have been able to collect. What's clear here, and that's what the Rashbam points out, is Abaye doesn't hold like that. Abaye holds like Rav Papa, who believes the reason you can't collect from your tumim is because lav b'nei me'avid mitzvah ninhu, that they are not obligated to do the mitzvah, and therefore you have to wait until they are gedolim in order to adjudicate with them. So it turns out, the way the Balei Tosfot read it, there's actually two machlokot here. Abaye says your migo doesn't work, and besides that, you're not going to collect until they are gedolim. Rabbi Bar Shavshum thought he had a right to collect immediately, as long as he took a shvuah. But to avoid the shvuah, he used the migo and kept the land. So he thought that it was a choice between keeping the land or taking a shvuah and collecting immediately. In the end, what Abaye says is, number one, the migo doesn't work. Number two is, if you want to take a shvuah, you're going to have to wait until they become gedolim. And that's what he says in the end. You're going to wait until they grow up. So he lost on both counts, which is that he's now got to wait, and he's still got to take a shvuah in order to collect the money from these yitomim. All right, so now, next case. Kreve the Rav Idi Bar-Avin, Shochiv, a relative of Rav Idi Bar-Avin passed away, the Shavak Dikla, and he left a palm tree. So here it's not clear. The Tosafot brings two girsaot down in the Gemara as to exactly what happened. The way that we have it in our girsa is Vishavak Dikla, he passed away, and the way the Rashbam explains it about the Tosafot, he had no children, he had no close relatives. So the question was, who was the closest relative that was going to inherit this palm tree that he had left behind? That's the girsa that we have. The other possible girsa is that he left a dikla lekrovo, that he had children, and they inherited whatever he had. But in his last will and testament, in his will, he put in that he wanted this palm tree to go to his relative. But he didn't define who that relative was. He didn't tell us who that is going to. And that's the discussion here. It doesn't really matter which lashon you use. In the end, the same problem arises is, who is the closest relative that's going to get this palm tree? And then we're looking for who is the closest of kin. And that there's a disagreement about. Rav Yehuda b'Avin Amar, Anakriv Netzvei. Rav Yehuda b'Avin says, I'm the closest relative, I'm entitled to it. Val Gavro, there was another individual, Amar, Anakriv Netzvei. He says, I'm closer relative. So here you have a mechloket as to who is the closer relative. L'sof, Odile, Diu Kariv Tvei. In the end, he admitted that Rav Idi Bar-Avin was the closer relative. Now this girsa in the Gemara is very controversial. There are three different girsahot as to how the Gemara played out. The first thing that the Rashbam says here, which it's interesting because it's not necessarily the obvious from the case, is that he believes Hekzikoto Ish Bekarko. That person took control of the property. Fishaya Alim Yoter. He was stronger. He was greater. He was stronger. And therefore, he took possession of the property. There was a safek, they were disagreeing about who was the karov. And in that situation, where we don't have a way to determine who gets it, called Alim Govar, whoever's stronger takes it. And that's what happened. That guy was stronger. He was more political clout. He had more money. He was physically stronger. Depending, there's Machlokim Rishonim later in the Masechta as to what called Alim Govar means. But whatever that means, he went ahead and he took possession of the property. Later on, according to the girsa that we have, a couple of years later, he decides, you know what? I'm not right. Rav Yehuda b'Avin was correct about this, and therefore, I admit that he is the Ter Karov. Ukma Rav Chista b'Yodeh. Therefore, Rav Chista interceded and gave it back to Rav Yehuda b'Avin, because he's agreeing at this point that Rav Yehuda b'Avin is the closer relative. Amalei. So now, Rav Yehuda b'Avin says to Rav Chista, Hadali Peirei Da'achal Mehau Yoma Ad Hashta. He's been utilizing the field all along. But now he's admitted to the fact that it was my field. Now that he's admitted it's my field, he should have to repay me back lease that he had here. He took the property all along, was eating from it, utilizing it. He should have to pay me back for those years that he utilized it, now that he admitted that it is my property. Amar, Zeu Shomrim Alav Adam Gadolu. This is what they say about an individual like this, that he's an Adam Gadol, meaning that Rav Yehuda b'Avin is an Adam Gadol. Aman Kosomich, Mar. Who are you relying on over here? Ahai, on him. I mean, the only reason you know it's your property, or the only reason you're getting it is because of his admission. Hakamar de ana mekarven atzvei. He says, I'm a closer relative. So what happens here is very difficult to understand, because the next line in the Gemara seems so obvious from this, which is a bayver of lo svirlo ad Rav Chista. They do not agree with Rav Chista's conclusion over here, which is that Rav Yehuda b'Avin was not entitled to the payroll because came into Odi Odi. Once he admits, he admits. So according to the Rashbam, the way that you read the Gemara is, This guy came along after some time and admits that Rav Yehuda Bavin is the closer relative. So now, Abaye and Rava's position is very understandable, which is that now that he admitted he's a closer relative, that means that he agrees that you're entitled to the property. If you're entitled to the property, not only are you entitled to the property, but you're entitled to all the back pay. You're entitled to all the payroll that he ate over that period of time. So Abaye and Rava, their position is very understandable. The problem is Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda says, yeah, well, you're relying on his admission. If you're going to rely on his admission, then take the land, you don't get the payroll. Why not? If his admission makes it that you are now entitled to it, why shouldn't you get it? Like Abaye and Rava said, why shouldn't you get the back pay? Oh, yeah. The mafreya, it should be obvious that you're entitled to this. So that's the difficulty in the Rashbam's pshat, the girsa that the Rashbam has. There are two alternate girsaot as to how to read the Gemara, and they run into problems in the other direction, because the stronger you make Rav Chisda, the less understandable Abaye and Rava are. Here, we make Abaye and Rava more understandable according to the Rashbam, but then Rav Chisda's position is less understandable. We'll explain it in a second, how the Rashbam deals with it. So if you look in the Balei Tosafot and the Rashbam, both quote from the Rabbeinu Chananel. And the Rabbeinu Chananel had the following girsa, which is, Ve'yesh Sfarim Shekatub Behem, Aiti Rav Yehuda Bavin, Sade Dahava Koriv. He brought Edim that he was a relative. Ve'okmar Rav Chisda Biyadei, Gam Arach Perushkin. And that comes from the Rabbeinu Chananel. That is what happened over here. It was not that the person admitted Rav Yehuda Bavin was a closer relative, but simply Rav Yehuda Bavin brought Edim to the fact that he was a relative. Not a closer relative, a relative. So now you have Rav Yehuda Bavin saying, I'm the closer relative, plus he has witnesses that he is a relative. The other party makes a claim that I am the closer relative, but he has no substantiation of that, he has no witnesses. So Rav Chisda paskins to give it to Rav Yehuda Bavin because of the witnesses. It's a vadai and a safek. He is vadai a relative. He has proof to the fact that he's a relative. Not that he's a closer relative, but that he is a relative. The other party has no proof. So then, Rav Chisda paskins, you get the property. Now Rav Yehuda Bavin comes and says, well, if you're going to give me the property, I should also get the fruits that are associated with the property. Rav Chisda says to him, just be happy with the land that you got, right? Don't push it, because Ella asade de'ant karov v'alo yadele umetok shu yuchol amar lo achalti yuchol amar in achli v'didi achli. This individual has amigo. He could have said, I didn't eat the fruit from the land. You come to collect whatever he ate over these last couple of years. He can say, I didn't eat anything. His claim wasn't that. His claim was that I'm a Yoter Karov, and I ate because I'm Yoter Karov. So what Rav Chisda says to him is, the opposing party has amigo. He comes along and says, I'm a closer relative and I eat the fruits. Amigo that he could have lied and said, I didn't eat the fruits at all. Therefore, he can make a claim that I'm a closer relative and I eat the fruits. You have no right to collect against him. The Edim don't testify about whether he has rights to the fruit, and don't testify about whether he's a closer relative or not. I mean, the Edim only say one thing, that Rav Yehuda Bavin is a relative. That's all they say. That has no bearing on the other party. He could be a closer relative, and he might have the right to eat the peirot. Given that, you don't have a right to collect the peirot and go back and demand. At this point, now that you have the land, going forward, it's all yours. But retroactively, we can't demand that he pay the payroll because he has a migo, and the Edim are not testifying against that. They're not ruining the migo. The Rashbam says, "Velano nihirali." He says, "I don't think that is a good explanation." Daha lo muchach hasugya deshmaita shahoda alachilat payroll. Where does he ever say that he agrees that he ate the payroll? El Edim ayuba davar lo yacholik for that. There are Edim here that stop him from being able to deny that fact. The Rashbam says is, how do you know he ate peirot? What is the evidence to the fact that he ate peirot? There's nowhere in the sugya it says here that he admitted eating the peirot that you want to collect from. The only way we would know that he ate in the land is because we have edim that he's been eating there for the last while. That means now we do have evidence that he ate there, and there's no longer amigo. And therefore it's amigo b'makum edim, and the Rashbam rejects that understanding of the Rabbeinu Chananel. Now, the Balei Tosafot, on the other hand, don't like the view of the Rashbam, and they uphold this view. They re-oppose this view of the Rabbeinu Chananel, and he explains it in the following manner. He says, "V'girsat rach niradari ikar." The way that the Rabbeinu Chananel learns makes the most sense. "Delo garis l'sof odilei." Doesn't say in the end that he admitted to it. "El garas l'sof aite sade deu kreve." In the end, he brings edim that he is a relative. "Velo garos karov tfei." Not Evim that he was a closer relative, but simply that he was a relative. So then, Rav Chista puts the property in his hands, because you have a Vadai and a Safek. The guy admits that he ate the fruits. Rav Chista patale b'migo, d'yamarmar lo achle. That's exactly what the Rashbam explained. He says that's the case, the way that Rabbeinu Chananel says it. Then, v'rava abayi savrei. Then what's the logic between abayi and rava? In this case, you've made Rav Chista's position so strong, then what are abayi and rava saying over here? I mean, the way that Rashbam explains it, abayi and rava makes so much sense, then Rav Chista's question, well, why does he say that? Over here, the way the Balei Tosfot are reading in the Rabbeinu Chananel, they say, it makes a lot of sense what Rav Chista said. Rav Chista is saying, you only got the property because you have Edim, not because you're really the rightful owner of the property, just a Vadai and a Safek. That doesn't entitle you to the Peirot. How do we know he ate Peirot? He admitted that he ate the Peirot. But that admission, you have nothing against that because he is a Migo. He could have said, it's my property. And that's why he ate the Peirot. Rav Abayi Savrei, Kevin Shachal Peirot, Ba'odi, since he ate the Peirot and admitted to it, Chayav L'Shalem. V'lo Mehem and Me'migo, and he's not believing Migo, ho, says, since they're losing the property, because there's no migo by the property, because the Edim are testifying that the other person, Rav Yehuda Bavin, is a relative, so that's a migo by Makom Edim. Since you're going to lose the karka, you should also lose the peirot, along with the karka, because the two come as a package together. So that's a bayin robos, but that's not a strong position that they're taking. What Rav Chista says is you bifurcate the case. You get the karka, not really because you really own it, but you get the karka because you have more evidence here. But that doesn't necessarily entitle you to the peirot that he ate until this point in time. Right, so now, the Balei Tosfot quote the Rashbam's Girsa, and they don't like the Rashbam's Girsa because they have a slightly different version of the Gemara than the Rashbam has. It says, the Logai is the Iru Garib Tvei, not like the Rashbam that says that he was a closer relative. So that's what he explains to Rashbam was not that the Girsa was that he had a closer relative. It's just he had enough. He didn't want to fight with Rav Yehuda Bavin. And therefore he just says, okay, you take it now because I don't want to argue with you anymore. I just had enough. I give up. I had enough with it. You take it. So then again, if you read it that way, the Balei Tosafot are making Rav Chista so logical. The guy over here says, you take it. Rav Yehuda Bavin comes and says, I want my peirot. Rav Chista says, what do you mean? The guy just gave it to you because he gave up. He didn't admit that it's your property. He just simply gave it to you. And then he says, well, then what's a bayin rava svara at all? Right. So the way the Balei Tosafot read the Gemara in that way, they make it so weak that it doesn't make sense at all. So what you have to explain over here is that there is a fundamental machloket, and this is what the Rashbam says over here, and it has major implications. Which is, according to the Rashbam's pshat, we said that there was a weakness in Rav Chista's position. Which is, according to the Rashbam, where we have a guy admitted that Rav Yehuda Bavin was a closer relative in the end. He has to give up the property. And you should have been have to disgorge the peirot as well. That's what Abayi and Rava say. What's Rav Chista's logic to split between them? So here, the Rashbam says something very interesting. He says that's because he was modeh. He admitted to it. V'zeshem modeh achshav, when you admit to something, harihu kin otein lecha matana. It's as if he's giving you a gift or a ilan midato. So this is a fundamental chakira in Hodat Baldin. When a person admits to the fact that he is wrong or that he owes money, why do we say that he is believed in that situation? What drives the believability of the individual given the fact that he admitted? We say Hodat Baldin kemeidim dami, and we believe him. What gives him that believability? Party to a case that admits to something, kameidim dami, is the equivalent of 100 edim, he admitted to it. So now, what is the mechanism by which we believe him? Why is a person believed when he admits to something? Different possibilities. There's a very big Sota Choshen on this issue, on this sugya, and he goes through the different possibilities as to why we believe an individual in these cases. One possibility is, when a person testifies to his detriment, we believe him, because there's no longer a chashash of sheker. We don't believe that he's lying anymore. I mean, people don't lie to their detriment. People lie to their benefit. So we believe him because there's no reason for him to lie over here. The other possibility is that he's neman bimigo. He's neman because there's a migo. He could have given it as a gift. He could have gifted it to the individual. So now that he admits that he's chayav, then we believe him because if he was right and he just took the property and then gifted it to him, he'd have the same result. So you believe bimigo. In both of those cases, what you are ending up with is a mitziyut. You're changing the facts on the ground. Your admission is now the reality that we have. Your admission makes it that the reality is that we're going to give it to the other party, either because we believe you, or you have believability because of a migo. In that case, you have a conclusion to the case because we've now, the reality has been determined by what this person has said. On the other hand, there are other possibilities of determining why he is believed. And this is what the Rashbam says over here. It's midin matana. Hodat baldin is the equivalent of a gift. That's exactly what you're doing. That's what the Rashbam just wrote here. You're gifting the property to the other party. Now, when you gift the property to the other party, what does that mean in terms of the case? Does that mean that that is now the facts on the ground? That is the reality? Or is that simply a hachra, which is that we're making a determination? That's a way to determine or to adjudicate the case in this situation. The last possibility is that ishavya nafshei chaticha di'isura, which is that the person makes it something, we have this in other cases, where someone says something's not kosher, then he's not allowed to eat it because he made it into something that's asur for him too. So here too, when the guy admits that he owes the money, he can't take the money anymore because he made it as if it's not kosher for him, and that's why he has to give it up. Now, that would only work outside of Beit Din. That wouldn't work inside of Beit Din. Outside of Beit Din, if he admits, we would say that he made it like a chaticha shel isura. The Ketzor HaChosher brings a fifth possibility, which is it's a gzeret ha-katuv. That when the Hadat Baldin Kamei Yidim Domi is a gzeret ha-katuv, he quotes a Rashi in Kedushin and Dam Samachei Amud Bet that seems to say that, and he leans towards that, and in the end it's a gzeret ha-katuv. Now, if you say that it's b'matana, then you have an ability to declare whether it is a chra or a mitziyut. Does the Hodat Baldin now result in a change in circumstance? Or is it simply a hachra? It's a way for us to make a decision. So we have this with many things that work in Beit Din. Things or protocols that happen in Beit Din. How do we view what you're doing in terms of the mechanism? We can say, for instance, Rove. We have the same problem. When you have a majority, what does the majority do? Does the majority now tell me that's the reality? Because the majority is this way, therefore I look at it as a reality? Or do I say Beit Din has to make a decision? In their hands, they have this vehicle called Rove. And Rove says that I should be machriya, I should decide in this fashion. It doesn't mean that in reality anything has changed. It just means, in this case, I have to decide in this manner because the Rove says that it's better to go this way than the other way. Does that mean that this item is actually something else now? No, it just means this is a mechanism of achra'ah. You have that question with all types of mechanisms. Chazakah is the same way. Does chazakah mean that that's the reality now? Or is chazakah just says that's one of the tools of Beit Din to make a decision? The same thing with Hodat Baldin. When you have Hodat Baldin, what is happening? When he admits, does that mean he's now changed the reality out there? The reality now is there's a new piece of evidence, and that evidence means that it doesn't belong to him. He's saying that it belongs to the other party, and that's the end. Or do we just say that that's a mechanism that Beit Din can use to decide the case? Doesn't mean that it's really the other parties. Just means that his hoda'ah now gives Beit Din a tool to decide against him. So that doesn't mean we necessarily believe him. Doesn't mean that we think that he is right. We just say, well, if I have this information in front of me, that makes us lean towards paskening in favor of the other party. Now, why does that matter? That might be exactly what the machloket is between Abaye and Rava and Rav Chista over here. The individual came along and said, it's yours. And how did the Rashbam term it? Well, he admitted it's yours. That means he's giving him a matana. He's giving him a gift. When you give a gift, what does that mean? The giving of a gift or the ability to give this as a gift, Rav Chista views that as being simply a mechanism for Beit Din to be machriya. He says, all right, I admit that it was his. Beit Din says now, well, if he admits it's his, our decision's going to go in favor of him. Does that change the reality? Is the property really yours? We don't know if the property is really yours. His admission just allows us to put the property in your possession. That's how we'll decide. So Rav Chista says that's all it does. It puts the property in possession. Doesn't mean it's your property necessarily. From here to forward, it'll be your property because Beit Din has decided. But that doesn't mean in reality it was your property all along. It's simply your property from here to forward. On the other hand, if you say that the admission is a koveya the mitziyut, it changes the facts on the ground. When he admits that it's your property, then literally it is your property, and that's why we give it to you. If you do that, then he should have to pay the back pay, because he, all along, it was your property. And that might exactly be the fundamental machlok between Rav Chista and Abaye and Rava. Rav Chista is saying this is just a achra. Your admission just gives us an ability to decide the case in Rav Yehudi Babin's favor, but it doesn't change the fact that we just don't know who the property belongs to. We don't believe you. When you admit to something, we don't believe you. You need a deem to be believed. From here to forward, it'll be Rav Yehudi Babin's, because that'll be our decision. But that doesn't mean retroactively it was his property. It just means from here to forward, we've the paskin in your favor. If you believe that the Hodat Baldin is a matana to the point where it means that you literally are the owner of the property and he's admitting that you're the owner of the property, then that is a mitziyut. And that means retroactively you should have to pay the payroll. Or we can say the same thing with whether we say the Hodat Baldin is believed or because he could have given a matana, it's a migo. All of those make it that he's so believed that he's changed the mitziyut. The facts on the ground are now that you own the property and not a decision of Beit Din. He's made it that you are the owner of the property, nothing to do with Beit Din. He made you into the owner of the property. That's the point. What does Hodat Baldin do? How does it work? That's the question. How does Hodat Baldin work? That's what the Rashbam says. Hodat Baldin works because it's a gift. That's what the Rashbam's saying over here. The Rashbam's saying over here, when it comes to monetary matters, when you do Hodah, we don't believe you. You're not believed. How come it works? Because you're gifting it to him. You're giving him a gift. That's how it works. We don't believe you, but you're gifting it to him. The mechanism for Hodat Baldin, it's important. Generally, we believe you need Edim in order to determine, in order to be Machriya. Over here, we don't have Edim. Your admission being like Me'edim, what is it? Is that a Achra or is that a Mitziyut? That difference might explain, according to the Rashbam, the Machloket here. It also might explain the Machloket between the Rashbam and the Baalei Tosafot about how to read the Gemara. Because what was the admission over here? According to the Rashbam, the admission was the fact that you're more Karov. The Rashbam doesn't see that as being a determination that the property definitely belongs to him. The Tosfot says, like, oh, you were suggesting, once he admits it's his property, why is there anything to discuss? That's why the Tosfot favors the Rabbeinu Hananel's Girsa, which says that the admission here was not an admission about the land, it was an admission about the peirot, about whether he ate the peirot or didn't eat the peirot. Because as far as the land is concerned, if he had admitted to it, then Abai and Rav for sure are right. So that's why he doesn't say it that way. He disagrees with the Rashbam and says that if you admit your Hodat Baldin, you would be believed, and that is Koveya the Mitziyut, and it would be his property, and you'd have to pay all the back pay. That might explain exactly the difference between the Rashbam and the Baalei Tosafot, and even within the Rashbam, it might explain the Machlok between Rav Chisda and Abai and Rav. Alright, the next case is a case that we've already seen back on Daf Lamed Aleph Lamed Aleph. Over there we saw that it was a machlok between Rabbah and Abaye. Over here, the Gemara brings it as a machloket between Rav Chisda and Abaye and Rava. And that's why it's brought again here, because you have a similar machloket that's between Abaye and Rava and Rav Chisda. Zeomer Shalabutai. Vzeomer Shalabutai. One guy says, the properties belong to my forefathers, and the other one says, it belong to my forefathers. Hayati Sade Davatehu. One of them brought evidence to the fact that it was belonging to his forefathers, and as Rashbam says over here, ad yom motam, until the day that they died, that they had the property. The other one brings evidence to the fact that he ate the years of the chazaka. So now you have each one of them with a piece of evidence. One of them has a piece of evidence that it belonged to his forefathers. The other one has a piece of evidence that he's been there for the years of the chazaka. Amar Rav Chisda, so Rav Chisda over here takes the same position that Rabbah took back on Lamed Aleph and Aleph, which is Malo L'Shaker. It's a migo. Why would he lie? Instead of saying that it belonged to his forefathers, he could have said that I purchased it from you, and I've been here for the requisite 3 years, and I don't need to show a shtar anymore. So if he was going to lie, he had a better lie. The better lie would have said, I bought it from you, and now I've been there the requisite 3 years. You have no claim anymore. I don't have to show a shtar. I have a valid claim. The fact that he now says it was my forefathers, so then we should believe him through that migo. So that's what Rav Chisda says, and that's what Rabbah said back on Lamed Aleph and Aleph. Abaye there, and now here Abaye v'Rava, lo svir lo had Rav Chisda. They do not subscribe to Rav Chisda's position because mali l'shaker b'makom edim lo amrinan. This is a migo b'makom edim. And amigo b'makom edim doesn't work. Now we've gone through this a number of times as to why amigo b'makom edim doesn't work. The Rashbam l'shitato over here says, the reason amigo works is because the amigo proves that your tana is true. So you have a claim, and then we want to substantiate your claim. We substantiate your claim through the amigo because you had a better claim. So you had a better claim, and we say though, malo l'shaker, if you're going to lie, you should have gone with the better claim. So now your claim that you do make is a much stronger claim. Now given that, Mali the Shaker about Makom Edim doesn't work is because your original claim has been upended. they deem come along over here and say it belonged to the other person's forefathers. So now your claim that it belonged to your forefathers doesn't exist anymore. So Mali Lashakir, the whole point of the Migo is to strengthen your original claim. And what the Rashbam points out over here, and we've seen this a number of times, is that your claim is now gone. It's been vacated because of the fact that you were lying. They deem prove that your claim is invalid. So now that your claim is invalid, the fact that you had an alternative doesn't do anything. The alternative was just strengthening the claim. But your claim is not valuable or not valid anymore, and therefore its Migo doesn't work over here at all. So that's the view of the Rashbam, and that's why Migo B'Makom Edim doesn't work according to Abaye and Rava. On the other hand, we've seen in the Balei Tosfot and others that the reason that the Migo doesn't work B'Makom Edim is because you have two different principles that are going up against each other, and those two principles give you Ne'manut. The Migo makes you believable. The Edim also give you a certain amount of believability over here. They're contrary to your position. And the question simply is, which one is stronger? Is a Migo stronger, Edim or stronger? And that is, Migo B'Makom Edim doesn't work, because we believe the Edim are stronger than your Migo. And that's how the Balei HaTosafot have phrased it until now. But that also sheds light on Rav Chisda's position. And by in Rava's position, we understand it's Migo B'Makom Edim, it doesn't work. Either because Edim are more believed than the Migo, that's the Balei HaTosafot. The Rashbam says Migo B'Makom Edim doesn't work because your Tana is gone. Your Tana is Sheker. And you can't strengthen a Tana if the Tana doesn't exist. But given that, what's hard to understand according to Rashbam's explanation is what was Rav Chisda thinking, or what was Rabba thinking before, that Migo B'Makom Edim works. And he just says, Hilkach Migo D'Motzi Tan Hochi, V'Yizke B'Tanozu, he would succeed with this Tana. Afagav D'Machish Lu Edim Mehemen, even though the Edim are up against him, he is believed. So now, if we try to understand what the logic is, there are a number of ways to deal with it. One is, Migo B'Makom Edim works because we paskin the din based on the stronger Tana. Whoever has the stronger Tana, they win. So over here you have Migo versus Edim, and the machloket maybe between Abaye and Rava and Rav Chisda is which of those two are stronger. Not that we're being koveya the mitziyut. This is the same chakira we saw before with the Beit Din. This is a mechanism for decision. It's simply for way for us to decide. When we're weighing two possible pieces of evidence, how do we decide? Are we changing the reality? Are we deciding, in fact, that this is what happened or this is what is true? No. We're simply having to make a decision in the case. And that is what the machlokin between them is. Which do we give more weight to? Which piece of evidence is stronger? Is the Migo stronger or are the Edim stronger? But that means that in Mitziyut, the thing is still a safek. But Beit Din has to come to some conclusion. Since they have to adjudicate the case and come to some conclusion, they're using these pieces of evidence to do that. And the way that they phrase it, there are a number of different approaches to phrasing this, why the Migo would overcome Edim. Rav Shimon Shkov says, the Tana makes it kemukzak badavar. Your claim with the Migo makes it if you are the mukzak in the item. And being mukzak in the item, we have to motzimi chaveiro olav araya. The Edim of the other party are not strong enough to take you out of that chazaka. And therefore, you are the winning party according to Rav Chisda. On the other hand, the Rabbi and Rava say, the Edim that are coming here and testifying to the fact that it belongs to this other person's fathers takes away or ruins that chazaka. The Sri Deish and the Kuncha Shri, Rav Chanan Wasserman, say that Beit Din is toein on his behalf. The Beit Din comes along and says, well, he could have made this other claim. Since he could have made this other claim, we're going to believe the claim that he made. Even though we have Edim that are weighing against it, we can see a certain amount of believability in what he is saying because he had this alternative claim. And the Minchas Osher says that when you make a claim, you do not lose the right to making alternate claims. This happens many times in secular courts today, that if a person produces a claim of some sort, he can then produce other claims. And they can present the case in this manner. I have this claim, and this claim. And just because I use or utilize one claim doesn't forfeit my right to use the other claims. And similarly over here, the fact that I came in with one particular claim doesn't forfeit my right from using the other claim. That's how the Migo works. And therefore over here, even though my claim now is proved to be problematic because of the Edim, I still have the right to the other claim. Given that, I have an ability through my Migo to overcome the Edim. Therefore, based on this, you could understand the machlok between Rav Chisda and Abaye and Rava, which is, Migo B'Makom Edim Which one of those is stronger? Is the Hachra'ah in favor of the Edim? That's the view of Abayin Rava. Or is the Hachra'ah in favor of the Migo? And the reason to believe the Migo, we just noted over here, is either because he's considered to be Mukzak by Davar, or that Beit Din uses that as a mechanism to make him believable, or just because you use one claim doesn't forfeit your right to the other claim. All of those would be reason for Beit Din to still believe you, even though there are Edim over here. And Rav Chisda thinks that Beit Din would be Machria, would favor the person with the Migo over the Edim when you have these two pieces of evidence. And Bayer Rava say no, that we favor the Edim over the Migo. But in all those situations, nobody believes that we're actually getting to the real facts of the case. These are just pieces of evidence by which Beit Din will make a decision. And the question is, which piece of evidence weighs more or is weighed more over here? Bayin Rova think it's the Edim. On the other hand, Rav Chisda thinks it is the Migo. The way that the Rashbam reads, he believes that when you have a Migo b'makom Edim, the Migo is vacated completely because you have no Tana. The whole way that a Migo works is that the other claim strengthens your present claim and makes it as if we believe you completely. And once you have Edim, we've taken away your present claim. The other claim now has no bearing. It can't strengthen your claim because your claim is not valid. So that's what Abayi and Rava say. Migo b'makom Edim doesn't work. That means in Mitziyut, we believe that your claim has gone away completely. And the facts are it belongs to the other party. It's a Mitziyut. It's not a Achrat Beit Din. But that might be what Rav Chisda is arguing on Abayi and Rava according to the Rashbam. Abayi and Rava believe that Migo b'makom Edim, the Migo is gone. And it's not just Achrat Beit Din. Those are the facts on the ground. Your claim is gone. Since your claim is gone, your believability is also gone, because believability was only reinforcing your claim. That has now disappeared. Now that that's disappeared, you have no right to claim the land because of the Edim that are there. So now it belongs to the other party. Whereas Rav Chisda might believe, unlike the conclusion of Bayin Rava, that that is the determination here, they might believe Migo b'makom Edim is an issue of believability. Which one is the better piece of evidence? Like the chakira we made in the Balei Tosafot, that you could determine that either Edim or Migo are stronger, but you could also have a fundamental machloket as to whether Migo was working mishum nemanut, or is Migo working mishum hachra'ah. If it's working because of nemanut, like the Rashbam says, then when you have Edim to the contrary, and it ruins the whole Tana, it's gone. You have no nemanut, the reality has now been changed, that you have no claim. And if you have no claim, the property belongs to the other party. On the other hand, Rav Chisda will believe it's a bad achra here. Which mechanism will Beit Din rely on more? Is it the Migo or the Edim? And Rav Chisda believes that that is what Migo b'makom Edim is, and he'll favor the Migo over the Edim. And so for the Rashbam, their machloket might even be more fundamental as to whether a Migo is a mechanism for determining the reality on the ground, it's a mitziyut, or is it achra? It's a mechanism for Beit Din to decide. Bayer Rava say, it is a mitziyut, and therefore since your claim is gone, Beit Din has no more reason to give it to you, because your claim is gone, and therefore belongs to the other party. Whereas Rav Chisda says, no, it's a mechanism for Achra'ah. It's a piece of evidence that Beit Din uses in deciding. The item remains a safek, but we just have to decide about it. Our decision will favor the Migo over the Edim. And that would be the machlok between Rav Chisda and Bayer Rava, according to the Rashbam. Or we said before that according to the Balei Tosafot, it might be that their machloket is about which piece of evidence is greater, but they both believe that it is a mechanism of achra, not a mechanism of determining the reality. Okay, next case. What are you doing in this land now? I purchased from you, and I've been here for 3 years, so it's mine. But he doesn't have a contract because the 3 years have gone by. Nobody objected. He doesn't have necessity to produce a contract at this point in time. He was only able to produce Edim that he was there for 2 years. He can't find Edim to the fact that he was there for 3 years. Amar Rav Nachman, Hadra Ara, Hadra Peire, says the land goes back because he doesn't have evidence of the 3 years. He doesn't have a chazakah. Without a chazakah, he needs a contract. He needs a bill of sale. He doesn't have that. So the property goes back to the person who is Mukhzak or who was the original owner of the property. Hadra Peire, all that he ate all along didn't belong to him because of the fact that the property was really belonging to the other party. So not only does he have to disgorge the land, he now has to disgorge the peirot that he ate because he ate peirot that belonged to someone else. So now over here, there are two important caveats to Rav Nachman's din, one brought by the Rashbam and the other one brought by the Balei HaTosafot. The Rashbam notes over here that the only reason he is chayav to pay for the peirot over here is if we have a deem that he ate the peirot all along. If we do not have a deem or evidence of the fact that he ate the peirot, then he's neman b'migo. Then he's believed through a migo because he could have just said, I didn't eat the peirot. The fact that he now says, I ate the peirot and they were my peirot, we're going to believe him with regards to those peirot. So it's the fact is, and that's what the Rashbam says over here, v'ikasadei dachlina the peirot. There were evidence, or there were edim that saying that he ate the peirot. Aval ilekasadei dachlina the peirot. If there were no evidence or no edim that he ate the peirot, elabodat piv, it was only through his admission that we know that he ate the peirot, then he would not have to disgorge the peirot. He would only have to disgorge the karka. Although the original owner could demand from him a shvut haseit, the shvut haseit on the peirot, zabninu minei, that he purchased them from him or that he owned the peirot, as long as he takes a shvut haseit, then that's fine. Because the only reason he's losing the land over here is not because we found him to be a gazlan, or we disproved him, it's just simply he can't bring enough evidence to his claim that he's been there for 3 years. He only got evidence to 2 years and not to 3 years. So based on that, the Rashbam says you need evidence that he ate the peirot, otherwise he has a migo and he's believed by the peirot, although the owner can demand a shvut haseit for the peirot that he's keeping or he's not paying him back. That's the first qualification. The second qualification that the Balei HaTosafot bring is that he's only entitled to get the 2 years of peirot back. He's not entitled to get 3 years of peirot back. Because if we give the original owner 3 years of peirot back, then by definition, the individual was in the karka for 3 years. So you can't have it both ways. You can't have it that you claim 3 years of peirot. That means that you're admitting he was in the land for 3 years. If he's in the land for 3 years, he has a chazaka. So the only right he has is to claim 2 years worth of peirot. He cannot claim the third year peirot, because if he claims the third year peirot, that would then obviate the need for him to pay for the peirot at all, because then he would have a chazaka that the land was his. Then Amar Rav Zvid, Im ta'an v'amar l'peirot yiradati ne'aman. So now, according to the Rashbam and many of the Rishonim, this is completely independent of what Rav Nachman said before. He's not coming to argue on Rav Nachman. He's coming to make a separate point. But then we're going to ask a question the Rishonim asked, based on this statement, how come Rav Nachman's din is true? But in the Gemara, Rav Zvid was not necessarily arguing on Rav Nachman, just saying something else, which is, Im ta'an v'amar, if he claims l'peirot yiradati ne'aman, if he says that I went down there to eat the peirot, then it was ne'aman, meaning that I purchased the right to eat the production of this field for this period of time, then he has believed in that. Lav mi amar Rav Yehuda. Didn't Rav Yehuda say, I man denokit magla v'tovila. Someone who's walking along with a magal, which is a scythe, or some sort of knife for cutting. V'tovila. Here there's a machloket in the Rishonim, whether tovila is a basket or it is ropes. And the Rabbeinu Gershom explains over here, the reason they brought a scythe and ropes is because, hay man denokit magla v'tovila, fisha dekalim heim gvoim. Palm trees are very tall. Shirotzim lukot atmarim, and when they want to go and harvest the dates from it, mevin magal aruch, they bring this very long knife, umesimim tovila shuhu sal berosh eitz. Then they put up a basket up towards the top of the tree, Umagbinasal, k'neged atmarim, they put this sal right under the dates, v'chotchim otam b'magal, they cut them with the knife, and oflim atmarim basal, and they fall into the basket. So in order to protect the dates that you're harvesting, you get this very, very long knife. It's like a pole with a knife at the end of it. And then you have a basket that you raise up to near where the dates are. And according to this, it might be you need a rope for the basket as well. And then you use the knife to cut the dates and they fall into the basket and not all the way down to the ground. So according to him, you're using all of these tools because of the height of the palm tree. But the basic gist of the Gemara is that this person's walking with the tools to harvest this palm tree and saying, Vamar, and he tells people, Izil igadre ledikla ledplanya, let us go harvest the following palm tree of so-and-so, the Zavna Niale, because I purchased the production of that palm tree from him. Mehemin, we believe him. Lo chotzif inish, the gazar dikla, to lav delay. People are not so mechutzaf to go and harvest a tree that doesn't belong to them. You can see here the word igadre is used over here. As Tosfo points out, ligdor or guder is the term that's used for harvesting of dates. But Tosfot also notes there was an alternate girsa, which he rejects, which is, it's not that he went to cut the palm tree down, but rather that he went to harvest the palm tree, although there are those that say that the girsa was igazre, and it meant to cut down the palm tree. But either way, the individual who says, I'm going to do that, he is believed because people are not so mechutzav to go and start harvesting other people's fruits, other people's items. The Baal Tosafot say that it's not even that he does it publicly. Even if he does it quietly or privately, a person is still not mechutzav to go harvest other people's property unless they really bought it. And that gives them a certain amount of ne'emanut. Also in this case, where a person makes a claim that I was had the right and I purchased the peirot on the property and he ate the peirot, we're going to believe him. Gemara says, Yochi Aranami. If that's the case, why don't we say the same thing about the property? That people are not mechutzav to take other people's property unless they really bought it. Ara aminan le achve shtarech. When it comes to the property, we say produce the shtar. Okay, you're right. People are not mechutzav, but people write shtarot on transactions and property, and therefore we want you to produce that evidence. The lack of that evidence, or the lack of a shtar, takes away from your believability in this case. On the other hand, shtar leperi lo avde inche. People don't write contracts when it comes to the granting of rights to eat the peirot or to utilize the field for a certain period of time. They don't necessarily write contracts for that, and therefore we can't make a demand for a contract. So over there, the lack of a contract does not detract from your nemanut. And therefore, since people are not mechutzav to go and take fruits or take items from other people's property, therefore you're believed when you tell us that's what you did. On the other hand, by karka, where you have the same claim because people are not mechutzav to go take other people's property, nevertheless, you have a mark against you or a mitigating factor, which is in those cases, there are contracts. The fact that you do not have a contract detracts from your believability, and therefore we don't believe you that you purchased the land because of the fact that you don't have a contract over here. And over here, as the Rashbam points out, your right to take these peirot is even though they're edim that you ate the peirot, and they're edim that the property belongs to another party. Because over here, your nemanut comes from the fact that you say, I purchased the peirot. Nothing that the edim are saying undermines your position. You're saying, I ate the peirot, and it belongs to the other guy. And that's what the edim are saying also. You ate the peirot, and the other guy owns the property. So you are not disagreeing, or the edim are not saying anything that is the contrary. They're not bringing evidence that it's not yours. And your believability here is not necessarily from a migo, where the edim would then upset the migo, but rather because of this idea that lo chatziv inche. People are not mechutzav to take things that don't belong to them in areas like property, in areas like and harvesting of the fruits, because it's something that is so brazen, a demonstration of ownership, that people only do that if they really are the owners of the property or they really are the owners of those fruits that they took. And as both the Baal Tosafot and the Rashbam point out over here, the right to these peirot or this claim is only a retroactive claim. It is not a prospective claim. If he comes in and says prospectively, I'm going to eat the peirot because I bought them, we're going to say to him, show a shtar or bring evidence to the fact that you bought these peirot. If he doesn't bring evidence to that fact, we won't let him eat the peirot. Retroactively, once you've already eaten the peirot, and that's done already, now he comes to make a claim, give me back my peirot. Over there, your claim that you purchased it and you ate the peirot because you purchased them, that is a valid claim. Again, because lo mechutzav inish. People are not so brazen to go and take other people's fruits when they didn't really purchase them. And the fact that people don't necessarily write shtarot for that, that's what gives you a nemanut. But that nemanut is only the mafreya retroactively. But prospectively, if you come and say that I'm entitled to the fruits because of this, that's not enough of a reason to say that you are neman prospectively. There we're going to say to you, bring evidence to the fact that you purchased the peirot. Now, based on Rav Zvid's position over here, they ask on the previous case by Rav Nachman, why don't we say the guy should be believed b'migo? In the beginning, he said, well, it was my land, and I ate it shnei chazaka, and he couldn't bring enough evidence that they were shnei chazaka. So in the end, we said the land goes back and the peirot go back. Why can't he make a claim that I bought it for its peirot? Had he said he bought it for its peirot, he would, yes, the land would go back, but he wouldn't have to repay the peirot because that is a valid claim. Since that's a valid claim, why don't we say migo that he could have said, I bought it for the peirot, that we believe him that he also bought the karka. The answer given by the Rishonim is, We don't say amigo when the other claim is a lesser claim. His claim up front is that he bought the property. Buying the property entitles him both to the property and the fruits. If he only makes a claim that he was bought it for the peirot, that's a lesser tana that will result in him getting less. In that case, he won't get the karka at all. He also won't get the fruits prospectively. He will only get the fruits retroactively. And so therefore, that's a lesser claim. So we don't say, oh, you're believed about buying the karka, migo, that you are could have said that I bought it for the peirot. Because if you said you bought it for the peirot, you would end up with less. And basically what we're saying is amigo only works when you have a better claim. Or there was another way to lie. But over here, if you had lied the other way, you would have ended up with less. Yes, it would have resulted in you having to pay less money, but still the claim itself would be a less of a claim. And so even though that would have protected you from having to pay the peirot, it's still not a claim the person would have taken because he wouldn't have gotten what he wanted. And what he wants over here is the karka, not just the peirot.
Tosafot rejects the migo because he says that he came for a claim for karka. And he says, "Dein ze migo, shari bali tvoa gam karka." And therefore you can't change your claim and all of a sudden say that there's a migo that he's making a claim for the peirot. And the Rashbam says it in a more formal way, which is shemachish dvarav rishonim. He's contradicting what he said in the first place. And therefore, einu toein v'chozer v'toein. You're not allowed to change your claim. You're not allowed to perjure yourself because you have made a claim for the karka. Now you can't all of a sudden change it for the peirot.
Others answer that the whole question of the Gemara here is back on that case of Rav Nachman. Not to entitle you to the land itself, but simply to protect you from having to pay for the fruits. Which is, of course, by land, you can't use this taina of lo chotzev inish, because we said before that that taina only works retroactively, not prospectively. If we give you the land because of that taina, then it's also a prospective decision, because we're leaving the land in your possession. And therefore, they say that the question is really a question on Rav Nachman's position before, which is that, why don't we say by Rav Nachman's position before, okay, he doesn't have evidence to keep the land, but that evidence of lo chotzev inish by the land should be enough to protect him from having to pay for the peirot. So yes, we don't believe him by the peirot, and yes, he didn't make a claim for the peirot, but his claim for the land should be enough that we say lo chotzev inish by the land, that he shouldn't have to pay for the fruits retroactively. The answer of the Gemara is, land and peirot are different. Peirot don't have a shtar, land does have a shtar. And since land does have a shtar, we're going to demand that you produce the shtar. Without that shtar, you're not only going to lose the right to the land, you're also going to lose the right to the fruits, because the fruits came along with the land and you never made a claim separately for the fruits. Okay, we're going to stop here, 9 lines up from the bottom of Lamed Gimel Amud Bet, because the next sugya, which is a famous sugya, is known as Naschot de Rabbi Abba. That always continues all the way through the Amud Aleph of Lamed Dalet.